Good evening and welcome back to the Art Filoche. It is wonderful to see you all here. Tonight, what I would like to do with your Rishus is to do an intro to the set of the last three brochas. We've done a lot. We've covered a lot of ground and we finished Shema Kaleinu last time, or Kabbalah Tefillah, which is really the crux of everything. As we said last time, we said Shema Kaleinu, not Shema Tefiloseinu. But it didn't say to hear our prayer, we said hear our voice. Because by the time you get to Shema Kaleinu, all the previous prayers have just turned into a sound. It's like, ugh! That sound itself isn't of its sound that a father recognizes or a parent recognizes. When you just literally call out in a tone, Hashem understands that as tefillah in and of itself. If a child calls out to a parent and goes, ah! That parent can actually... I remember Rabbi Lawrence Kellerman saying when you should or when you shouldn't answer a child's cry. And sometimes a child is crying just because they're whinging or they want attention. And sometimes a child cries because they really need help. And someone, I was a man, it was a bocha that asked, I was in the room. A bocha asked, yeah, but you never know, right? You never know which is which. You never know whether a child is calling out for attention or whether a child really needs help. So really you have to go every time a child cries. Rabbi Kellerman said, no, a mother knows a child's cry and she'll know, good evening, and she'll know 100% whether or not that cry is a cry from a child that just is whinging and wants a toy and really needs to go to bed, or Rahman al-Aslan, that the child is in danger and needs help. And by the time we get to Shema Kaleinu, the sound of our tefillah is in and of itself a request. That's why I say Shema Kaleinu, listen to our voice, just listen to the guttural sound of it. And that was the closure of all the brochas that we asked for. And now we finished. We finished the personal supplications, which started at brocha number 4, Atah Chayinein. And we finished the national supplications, which started with Tkabah Shofar, which is Kibbutz Golios. And we talked about the link between them all and how Shema Kaleinu, or Kabbalah Tefillah, is like the mayonnaise, as it were, on the sandwich that binds it all together as one filling for our tefillah. Now we have the last piece of bread, which is Avoida, Haidah, and Shalom. And these three make a unit, just like the first three, which is Avos, Gvuras, and Kedushas Hashem. So just like we had an intro to the first three, now if we can, I'd like to take a little bit of an intro to the last three. And the last three brochas form their own unit, starting with the word Ritzei, which means will or want. And it's called Birkas HaAvoida, literally the Brocha of Servitude, or specifically, Temple Service. And here we're asking Hashem to want us, literally desire us, and to want our tefillahs, and to return his full service back with the Beis HaMikdash, and the resumption of the Korbanos, the offerings. Now, if you remember, we talked about the Chasam Sofer at the very beginning. Remember, we had a whole bunch of, I don't know if you remember, there was a whole bunch of questions as to why do we daven. Do you remember that? And we asked, why do we daven? It's boring, it's all the same words. One of the answers as to why we daven was that it replaces, the Chasam Sofer said, the lack of the temple service. Because the temple service, we can't do the temple service today. And one of the functions, not the only function, but one of the functions of the tefillah is to fix up and fulfill what we are lacking with the avoider that was done in the Beis HaMikdash. So much so, mincha, which is an afternoon sacrifice, afternoon offering made of flour and oil, is now said by us verbally. But really, back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, or when the Beis HaMikdash Be'ez Hashem comes again, and we're going to talk about the fact that the Mashiach is not going to add anything new, all he's going to do is bring us back to the perfection of service. Like, he's not going to come up with a new creature called Chilazon, and the Techeles isn't going to be pink. All he's going to do is bring us back to what we actually have lost. That's what the Mashiach's job is going to do. So the Korbanos are going to restart. So they won't daven mincha, we'll do mincha. We'll do mincha, right? So we're going to discuss. So one of the things that we're davening for here is a resumption of the whole temple avoider and everything that it can achieve. And in the beginning of the bracha, we say the word Ritzei. And we ask Hashem literally to desire us. We say, be favorable, desire us and your people Israel and their prayers. And that request is quite different from Shema Kaleinu. What do we say in Shema Kaleinu? We said, listen or hear our voice, Hashem, and have pity and mercy upon us. And we talked about the difference between pity and mercy, what the nuance is between there. Now, we're not asking him to hear and accept. We're asking him to desire us. That's quite a different thing to ask someone, right? Like, if you request someone, will you listen to my supplication? Will you hear my plea? Will you answer my... That's one thing to ask a judge or a queen or, I don't know, a policeman or something like that. It's very different to go up to someone and say, please desire me. Please like me like your best friend. That's a very difficult thing to say to anyone. I mean, that's a difficult thing to say to a spouse or a child or a brother or a parent. You know what I mean? That's like a very intense thing to say. And we say that three times a day. Think about what that means relationship-wise. You can say, you know, I'm begging you for help. I need this, this, and this. I need, I don't know, health and wealth and panasa and whatever. And it's a bafakasha. Okay? Please, I want you really to like me. Think about that. Think about what this means. The Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Yud Amud Aleph gives over a concept that when Ka'al Yisrael are Oisim Ritzono Shel Mokom, they're doing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, then they're called Bonim. They're called children to Hashem. But when they don't do God's will, they're called avodim. They're called servants. Very interesting thing. I saw, I think in the name of the Yivetz, that are bringing a Zohar Kaddish that says in the dancing of Simchas Torah, which we've just recently celebrated, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to all the Malachim, says, look at my children. He says, they put their own troubles behind them. They've all got troubles. Each one of them has got their own pekel in life. And all they do is drop everything to honor me and rejoice in my Torah. And he shows off Klal Yisrael to the Malachim on high, saying, look at these people. And he calls them my children. Why? Because at that point, we are. If you're doing his will, if you literally drop everything for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you've got to say, he's dad, right? And he will call us, he'll reciprocate and call us bonim. If we rescind and we don't get to the level where we're doing what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants, we're still part of the group, but we lower the level from children to slaves. Either which way, he's got to look after us, but it's a different relationship.
And we've got to still do his will either way.
Yeah, either way you go, that's right. That's right. A child or a slave still has to do what they're told, but it's a different relationship type. You're quite right. At the end of the day, they've got to go to bed at 10 o'clock or whatever, that you know, the curfew times are. A slave, let's say, if he doesn't go to bed at 10, he'll get whipped. A son is going to get shouted at. But either which way, there's a difference in relationship. It depends which house you go. Yeah, I don't know about my boy. I'll whip them all. Maybe things are best left unsaid, Adrian. So Oisim Ritzono Shel Mokom can't possibly be referring to the observance of mitzvahs, because as you're quite rightly saying, if we don't observe mitzvahs at all, why should we even be called slaves? Obviously, we're doing the mitzvah. If you're doing the mitzvah, you can be called a slave. But if you're not doing the mitzvah, you can't be called an eved. You're a calcitrant. You've just walked off. So when you're doing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, then you're called bonim. So what does Oisim Ritzono Shel Mokom mean? You can't tell me, well, I'm not a child because I'm not doing Hashem's will. You're still a slave. In which case, you've still got to do Hashem's will, which is what you just pointed out, which is the whole question of the Gemara, right? So it appears like this. Klal Yisrael functions on two totally distinct levels. And we see this in our tefillahs, especially in Yom Ha'Raim a lot, in Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, where we say, if we're like children, then look at us like children. And if we're like slaves, look at us. What are you talking about? Either which way, we're doing your will.
What does it say? Like, what's the
toes? You have to get a machzor. It's a avodim, honey. If we're going to be bonim, bonim. If you're going to be avodim. The key is like this. An eved or a ben is still doing what Hashem wants. She can't say when they're not doing my will, they're slaves. So what's going on? You can either fulfill God's will by learning Torah and observing mitzvahs and receive your just reward, but that is a lower level, and that's the level of kiyum. But on a higher level, Oisim Ritzono Shel Mokom means we create God's will. Oisim Ritzono, you can reread it, make the will of the omnipresent. When you do something on a high enough level, God will follow suit based upon what you say. It's a famous concept of tzaddik goes to Hashem Mekayim. If a Kodesh Baruch Hu says a guy's going to be ill, then you go to a tzaddik, he gives a massive brach, and the guy gets well. How should that work? Because the tzaddik has bent his will to God's will, it's only fair, measure for measure, that God bends his will to the tzaddik's will. I'll tell you about Rav Kaduri, who smokes 60 unfiltered cigarettes a day. Now, we don't, you know, like, but I went to get a bracha from him. Now, he died, yeah. He died at about, now, we don't really know how old he was, but conservative estimates put him at 113. He had a shul off of Shmuel Anavi. And I remember going to get a bracha from him. He was a very, very aged man. But when he died, like, was he 113? Was he 118? Nobody really knew exactly how old he was. But believe me, he was very, very old. And the question was, in his office, you saw these yellow nicotine stains on the... It's like ridiculous, like literally smoked. See, unfiltered. We're talking real deer, you know, Lebanese gold, kind of like that. Just like smoking really heavy. How can he live to 113? You don't live to 113 smoking 60 a day. He got a bracha from the Ben Ish Chai that cigarettes will never affect him. Now, I am not... No, how did he get a bracha? He got a bracha from the Ben Ish. He was a Talmud. He was a Zaken and Mekobanim, Rav Kaduri. So why didn't he tell... So Rav, the Ben Ish Chai told him it'll never affect you and you can smoke them. Now, if you get a bracha from the Ben Ish Chai that cigarettes don't affect you, it won't affect you. Bavakasha. Yaakov Avinu was in a very, very sad state for over 20 years over his son, Yosef, who was away. He didn't know that he was alive, but he thought he was dead. And Sarach Bas Asher was told by Yehuda, we can't just walk in and say, Yosef is alive, because it might kill him. It's just such a shock to the system. We know how incredibly fragile he is emotionally. We can't just walk in and go, hey, good news, we found him. So they told Sarach to go in, and she played the harp, and she started singing a song. Oh, Yosef, Yosef is alive, and he's the king of Egypt. And she started going through all these things. As he was hearing her play that, for the first time in 22 years, he got happy. The second he became happy, immediately he fell into Ruach HaKodesh and he got Nevuah. Because Nevuah doesn't devolve upon someone who's sad. So suddenly he felt a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is the first time he'd had that in over 20 years. The first thing that came out of his mouth was the joy. He said, may you live forever. She never died. She never died. She was the one that was telling the people in the Gemara when they were having an argument, when they walked through Yom Suf, was it like lattice work or did the water turn into bricks? And a woman turned around and said it was bricks. They said, how do you know? She goes, I was there, I know. That was Sarach Bas Asher. Sarach Bas Asher. I had an Iranian chevrusa while I was in yeshiva. And he says there's a whole story with her saving a whole community in Iran. And they have a whole shul there called Bet Sarach, where she saved a whole community near Tehran.
Alive now?
No, well, she technically is alive now, but like Eliyahu Navi, she walked into Shemaim. She's one of the seven people that ascended to Shemaim alive, along with Eliezer, Eved Avraham, Chezkiyahu, Yonah ben Amittai, Sarach Bas Asher, Eliyahu Navi, Chanuch. These people ascended. These are seven that ascended alive. She's one of them. How did she get that? She got a bracha from a tzaddik like that. Now, why is that fair? When Yaakov Avinu's completely bent his will to a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will, when he says, I want this to happen, a Kodesh Baruch Hu bends his will to his will. Fair's fair. I mean, the whole of Mesillas Yesharim is, if you can get to Lezer Ben Badas, if you can bend your will to the level where you can refine yourself to the level, you can also have Tchir Samaisim. You can have the keys to Tchir Samaisim. Right? These are open to you. So what does it mean we create God's will? The Rabbeinu Shlomo wants us to initiate and direct his will into the world. And our Torah and Mitzvahs, our davening, and our kabbonis strengthen and develop God's will according to his desire. This is stated in Tehillim, where it said, God does the will of those that fear him. That's Tehillim 145:19. If you fear Kodesh Baruch Hu, and you say you want something done, he'll fulfill your will, because you're constantly fulfilling his will. Fair's fair. There's a Gemara Brochus, Staff Zion, a very famous Gemara Brochus, Staff Zion, Omid Aleph, 7a in Brochus. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu requested of Rabbi Yishmael Kain Godel a Brocha. It's an amazing thing. He's a Kain Godel, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu turns up on Yom Kippur. He says, Rabbi Yishmael, give me a Brocha. You've got to get to a level where Kodesh Baruch Hu asks you for a Brocha. I mean, that's people can do that. I mean, this has happened. It's not bad, right? Not bad. So what did Rabbi Yishmael's Brocha to Hashem was that it should be his will to suppress his anger and that his mercy should override his attributes. And in that way, Rabbi Yishmael created or directed Hashem's will, kevyochel, as it were, onto Hashem. That's what Oysim Ratzon Hashem Mokam means. Oysim Ratzon Hashem Mokam means if you're just doing what Hashem tells you to do, al pi shulchan aruch, by the dots, you're an eved. If you're living and breathing the mitzvahs, and you tell Hashem what to do and he does it, you're like a son. A son can tell a father what to do and a father will listen. But if a slave tells a man what to do, still the guy's going to go, you're my slave, shut up, you know what I mean? Just get on with the job, you know, mow the grass. But if a son turns around and goes, Dad, you really ought to listen to this. This is important. It comes from a different way. He'll say, yeah, okay, son. We have that power connection. That's what we're davening for. Desire us like a son, like a child. Listen to us. For Shavus, avoid the very basic. Do what we're telling you. Bring back the base of English. Get it going. That's not a slave requesting it. That's a son telling a father, let's do this.
It's not worked.
We've got to get to the level of a son. When we're on this level, then we're called Bonim. And Bonim also is Boine, Loshen Builders. That's a famous picky of us as well, right? But when we only fulfill God's will, not to the level to create, we're merely turned servants. That's the difference between an Eved and a Ben. This is why our tefillahs are constantly beginning with Yehi Ratzon. May it be that our actions be your will. May our actions be your will. May we get to the level where what we're doing becomes your will. Now, it's a very interesting thing. Regarding Kabonis, the Torah says that it's a reich nechayich laHashem. It's in Vayikra, Aleph Tes. It's going to be a pleasing fragrance, like a spice, an incense, as it were, to make Hashem happy. And Rashi says, it's a satisfaction to me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I spoke my will and it happened. It's not fulfilled, but it's actually made and developed through the offering. When you do what Hashem wants, His will has become translated through you willingly doing it into something real. So I was discussing. Get through. So much to discuss. Are you with me? Is everyone comfortable so far? Oh, there we go. Okay. So, now, have people here done the Derech Hashem Shirim? Have anyone heard Derech Hashem stuff? No? We talked about the difference between the Jews with the neshama that they had post Matan Torah versus the Gentiles who rejected the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And because a Jew has a different job, he's given a different engine to do that job. Now, that's just natural. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what he was doing when he's offering the Torah was, would you like to become an active partner in the rectification of the universe with me or not? And the Gentiles, I'm just paraphrasing, this is really what the deal is. The Gentiles said, what lifestyle choices does that engender? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, well, now that you're asking, this particular lifestyle change is going to be the hardest for you. They said, well, if it's based upon that, we don't want to change our lifestyle. It's really Judaism is a set of lifestyle choices. We don't want to change our lifestyle like that. We don't live like that. And therefore, no, we don't. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't just wipe them aside. He said, okay, but that means you're going to have a secondary role in the rectification of the universe. You're less central to the universe's perfection now. But that doesn't mean you're not useful. But you're going to have a different neshama because you have a different job to do. You now got Shefer Mitzvah Neinach like everyone else. The Jews have taken it on. They're going to need a turbocharged neshama because they've got a lot more to do. Does this make sense? Is this, you with me? Do you need a window open? Do we need a window?
No, fine.
Are you too hot?
Do you mind?
Could we just a little bit? I'm very, very warm. Is that okay? Do you mind? I don't know how to. Okay, yeah, is that okay? So Jews have a different neshama to a non-Jew. Now this designation is enhanced by our speech. Atavachartanu mikol ha'omim. We say. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, we qualify from autonomy called Lashonus. You've elevated us from all the languages, from all the tongues that Hashem has given, Loshon HaKodesh, to reflect our holy neshama like the holy tongue of the Torah itself. Then it says, Ahavta Oisanu. God gave us the means to develop this special neshama, to use it in order to get close to Him. We've got special tools. We've got the Torah itself, which means we as Jews have a very special ability to develop a very close and intimate bond with the Borei Olam himself. And that stems from the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sanctified us with these mitzvahs and gives us the chance to become increasingly Kaddish the more we do. When you do, I was just learning today, say for Chinuch, I was going through mitzvah number 65, Samachay, is to be kind to widows and orphans. He's got a huge discussion about this. About why we should be kind. They have unimaginable legal rights with Beis Din. A Beis Din must argue out a case if it comes to a Din Torah with a widow and orphan on the side of the widow's orphan as if the Beis Din, the Dayan, is the father of the person or the husband of the wife. Because there's no one else to stick up for them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to develop our compassion internally, which naturally we might have revulsion with those people at lower or more vulnerable statuses than us, because he wants to generate that Kedusha inside of us. Mitzvahs are a manifestation of what Hashem wants for us, and that we actually change behaviorally. That's actually how it works. So when you're kind to a widow or an orphan, you're channeling a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Rotson into you, into the world by doing that, because you're saying, listen, at the end of the day, they're vulnerable. You know, I've got into a case where they're difficult people, possibly, and I've taken them to Beis Din, and I've won. And Kodesh Baruch Hu's saying, you've got to let it slide. You've got to be kind to them. You've got to do that, because that's what I want for you. Now, when you do that with that mitzvah in mind, you're channeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu into your life and therefore into the world. V'kiddushanu mitzvah secha. You're sanctifying us with mitzvahs. That's an enhancement. Ahav to Isonu. You loved us. V'rotzisabonu. And that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does his will through us. V'kavtanu malkeinu la'avoda secha. And you draw us close to your service because avoda is how you get there. Now, being chosen and the fact that we were given Lashon HaKodesh personifies us.
I've got a question on that.
Yeah.
You said we were chosen, but you said that...
That's true. It's a two-way street. At the end, that's true. The Goyim rejected HaKadosh Baruch Hu, leaving us as a default at the end.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But in the meantime, I got to do that. The very first bracha, just to backtrack, we say something extremely important. Umevigo el livnei v'nehem, and you're going to send a redeemer to their descendants. Lama'an shemoi ba'ava, because he's had enough of putting up with the constant barrage of insults the Gentiles will be throwing at him. Before that, we said a very important thing. He's going to bring the Mashiach to end this. Why? We give the reason. We say, Akel HaGod, Lagiboy Vanor, Akel Elyon, he's huge, he's massive, he's like above everything, and a human that's so high would want nothing to do with the riffraff. Yet he creates every single atom and every molecule, even though he's so lofty. For Kaine HaKol, he creates every single particle. For Zoyche Chaste Avos, he remembers the loving kindness that was done by certain people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is directly involved in human behavior, and is watching it and scrutinizing it. And there are certain people who he made a promise to. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov and their wives and their families behaved in a way where Kodesh Baruch Hu had segregated them from humanity and had used them as pinmen from Noach down to Avraham to do something with them. Now you're right. At the end of the day, Klal Yisrael could have rejected it at Har Sinai. That was an option.
Even Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the Avraham, I would argue that he chose Hashem. Not the other way around.
No, that, you know what? It's a two-way street. You can choose Hashem. You can't force HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do anything. It isn't as if you choose Hashem. Hello. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's got a rotzon as well, and he doesn't need to be forced into any situation by anyone.
Not
I got news for you. What he did is he opened up a door. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to rest upon such a tzaddik. That's his doing. You can't force HaKadosh Baruch Hu into no corners. Oh, I found you, therefore you're mine, and I've got rights over you. It doesn't work like that. Kodesh Baruch Hu can do what he wants. He said, based upon your actions, I'm also allowed to make a choice as to how I interface with you. That's fair. Anyway, look, you can't just say, look, I found a woman and I married her. Hello, she's got a daya as well. It's not a forced marriage, this. We wanted each other. He wanted us. We wanted him. Had we said we don't want you, he'd have folded. He wasn't forcing it. Yes, you're right. We could have said, no, we don't want the tyrant. And the world would have been folded, our tradition is. But Vakasha, but it was still like, our
Ratzon. The nation had the opportunity.
They certainly did. But they rejected him. And he therefore said, fine, I'm changing my relationship with you. It's very interesting. The Rambam, end of Hilchos Malachim, which talks about the difference between Jews and Gentiles. Hilchos Malachim Perek Tesis, where we learn out, and what the difference is between Jews and Gentiles. In that very Perek of Hilchos Malachim, the Rambam holds that it's conceivable for Smicha to be returned before Mashiach comes. But it will definitely be returned by the Mashiach. We've got to have real Smicha come back. What's one thing got to do with another?
No, but how could it be returned?
Oh, very good question. There's a whole thing. Well, it can be. Technically, a rabbi could technically invent. No, you're right. He's not being smuchan. Who's going to kick it off? Who's going to kick it off?
Yeah, exactly.
Who? Very good. We've always got to have an immortal Kohen.
Okay, fine.
He's got to kick off the paradumma. Someone's got to be a Kohen. And someone's got to be a smicha. He's got to be a smuchan. Someone's got to kick off the chain and say, excuse me, we've got to restart here.
He
says, the Rambam says they will offer some. You know, when there's no Beis HaMikdash and there's no Mishkan, are you allowed to give animal offerings?
No, you're not, because someone did do that.
The Kodesh Baruch Hu says you're allowed to. You can go technically deraisa today. You can set up a bama, which is an altar in your garden, and give an animal sacrifice. Nothing is stopping you, but we don't do it today. But when there's a mikdash, when there's a fixed place where you go communally, either when the Mishkan was at Shiloh or Nov, or when the Beis HaMikdash is set, because we have a central place of worship, then you're only allowed to give animal offerings in that central place of worship. The Mishkan when it was set up for a long time, or the Beis HaMikdash when it was established. In lieu of not having a Mishkan or a Mikdash, technically, you could set up a bama anywhere and give a korban any time. That's deraisa. You can do that. There were certain times of deraisa you're not allowed to. That's when you have a central focused mizbeach. The Rambam says they will offer sacrifices and observe Shmita and Yovel according to their Torah laws. It seems possibly to the Mashiach. Therefore, when Mashiach comes, definitely the Karbonos are going to restart. So it is clear, and this is a discussion that I want to have with you, this is a misquote from Rabbi Cook, that when the Mashiach comes, there'll be no animal sacrifices. That's floating around a lot. I need to discuss that. It is clear that the animal sacrifices are going to be renewed at the time of Mashiach. And we learn from numerous sources, Nevi'im, Yecheskel especially, that Korbanos can be brought even before the Beis HaMikdash is built, on Bamos, while there is no centrally functioning Mizbeach. The Rambam is telling us that if the sacrifices aren't renewed prior, they will certainly be renewed by the Mashiach. So animal offerings are back on the cards, either just before or after Mashiach, back on the Mizbeach, right after. One of the first things we know that the Sanhedrin's got to be renewed. We know the Sanhedrin the Sanhedrin has to get a king. They have to coronate a king. That king's going to be able to sit in the precinct of the Heichel of the Beis HaMikdash. Even a Kohen can't do that. A Kohen can't sit. He'll have a throne there. And the animal sacrifices are going to we're davening here for the reinstatement of the Avoider, which includes animal offerings. That's what we're davening for. Why? The Rambam says that one of the Mashiach's main functions will be to return the Davidic dynasty. We talked about this Est Samach, if you remember. We talked about the coming back. We talked about that a lot. Build the Mikdash, or at least some of the foundations. At least lay the foundations for the Mikdash. And gather in the exiles. He's got a lot on his plate. And, it says, inspire world peace as well. He's got a tremendous portfolio. No, that's way afterwards. That's after the whole thing. We'll talk about that. That's way afterwards. This is way before that. The Shemitah for the earth, that's Shabbos. Yeah. After that, then is Olam Haba. No, there's very strict. There's first is Mashiach, then there's Yom HaDin, then there's Tchias HaMeisim, Yom HaDin HaGadol, then the earth lies fallow, then there's Olam Haba. It's a whole. So the Rambam continues, this will be done to such a perfect degree that all the laws that apply to the three areas once again will be applicable. The Mikdash will be built in such a way that all the sacrifices can be brought. The exilees will be gathered in such a way that Shmitah and Yovel will be applicable. In order for a Yovel to be enforced, all Jews must live in Eretz Yisrael, by the way.
In order for Yovel to
be enforced, not Shmitah, Yovel, the Jubilee year, which is translated Yovel is Jubal.
Okay.
All the Jews have to live there.
All
of them. Everyone's got to be back. And each clan must occupy the boundaries designated to it by the Torah at the time of Yeshua. Which means Asher has to be in Asher's area. Gad has to be in Gad's area. Manasseh has to be in Manasseh's area. Once everyone's where they need to be, only then can you do Yovel.
So all 12 tribes will be reinstated?
Yes, it includes the Transjordan. The Transjordan's coming back to us, and we get all of Lebanon going down to going up to Turkey as well. So the Rambam is not relating that civil law will return in the time of Mashiach, because that can happen way before the Mashiach comes. And the Mikdash can be built, and the exilees can be returned as well, even before Mashiach comes. But the perfection of things, such as the exact location of the Mizbeach, right on the edge of Binyamin and Yehuda's territory, you have to mamish, put it in the corner on the borderline between their territories, and what the chilazon is. I'm building a shi'a, I've got shells of different chilazon. I'm building a whole shi'a on tcheles. The bottom line of like 2.5 hours work is that I believe God is actually obscuring what the chilazon is. There's so much to say what it is, and there's so much to say what it isn't, that we can't know what it is. It seems as if Hashem is waiting, as it were, for the Mashiach to come to tell us exactly what it is. But one of the things Mashiach is going to do, we're going to get the tcheles back. That will be achieved by Mashiach in order that no deterrent will exist to impede the original function. So the Rambam is clearly pointing out that the era of Mashiach will not be something new and unknown, as I said earlier, rather a return to the original state of perfection. We're davening Ritzai. We're saying, Hashem, turn towards your people, and this is the key. We say, return and restore your service. Bring back the service as it was. Not make something new. Don't be mechadesh anything. Just restart the way it was. Now, while we are here, one of the things that comes up a lot, and I do get asked this by, I don't know, animal rights activists, but people with animal issues. And they're very good. I think it's coming from a very good place, but it's badly manifested, but it's coming from a very good, genuine place. We're so out of tune with real Judaism. Real Judaism, Pesach, has to be celebrated by men and women in the middle of the night, in the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. We have to get together, we have to roast a lamb, and we can't leave any of it overnight. Someone's got to have a bit of brain, someone's got to have some spinal cord, everyone's got to have their bits. Only thing that's left is the bones. You've got to eat Aries. Aries the ram, you've got to eat it. And you've got to be in it, and you've got to be in the Eretz Yisrael, and you have to be in the Beis HaMikdash. That's where Kodesh Baruch Hu wants you. It's not some kind of table that's beautifully set in London or Muncie or New York or Tasmania with people sitting around with little foldy haggadahs with pictures in. Real Pesach is really in Eretz Yisrael, and a brocha that Kohanim used to give each other before they went to work is, may you be ankle high in blood. Now that, we don't think about the fact that the pictures, that, yeah, have you seen my model of the Beis HaMikdash? I got a model, a big model of the Beis HaMikdash, all the pictures. Hold on. We don't think of it as an abattoir.
Sounds like one.
But part and parcel of what goes on there on a daily basis is mass animal slaughter. This is something that we just don't think about. I mean, all the pictures, the Beis HaMikdash, you see everything, they're very clean. It's like this beautiful white building with Kohanim walking about with these spotless white garments. You want to actually see like a drone flying over a working day in the Beis HaMikdash. So one of the jobs of the Kohanim was, someone had to take the entrails and squeeze it between his fingers to make sure all the excrement was outside of the kishkas before they put that on the Mizbech, because it's not right to put that on the Mizbech like that. That's Sam Cohen's job. Someone's got to do that. Now, you've got to understand, that's a working Beis HaMikdash.
More like an abattoir.
No, it's not more like an abattoir. It includes the functioning of an abattoir within its walls.
Okay.
Now, question is like this. Someone can ask you, that's cruel and it's barbaric. And why would God want the slaughter of animals as part and parcel of his service, to the point that Jews all around the world, multiple times a day, are praying for the reinstitution of a service which includes such barbaric treatment of animals? That's a question. That's a question. Do you hear the question? I mean, do you hear the question at least, right? But that's, now you've got to understand, we're so out of tune with the body based on death. It's like, well, why should we want that? We're so far away from who we are. We're like, you know what? Why are we even dabbling for this?
Surely it's the impact of the slaughtering of the animals and what it's supposed to have on our improvement, as opposed to the slaughtering per animal. Just, it's not barbaric. It's a divine service for our self-rectification.
You try explaining that to someone like that.
And also, you know, we're living in a time. Maybe we're not meant to perceive it that way. Maybe we just perceive the way. I mean, don't explain, but.
The whole question is based upon a faulty premise. We've just had Parshas Noach. And the first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Noach when he came off the ark was give him permission to eat meat.
He didn't do so.
Hold on. Well, hold on. He did later. Hold on, everyone. That's not the point. That's irrelevant. Hold on. Everyone did. And the first thing he did was slaughter all the animals, the spare sets. He had 7 sets of good ones. Why kill them all? Adam wasn't killing the animals. The first thing he did was start slaughtering the animals en masse.
Why did not do that?
Oh, you weren't allowed to eat meat prior. Adam Arishan wasn't allowed. Now, there's a whole Zohar Kodesh saying that the Malachim would roast meat for him. He wasn't allowed to do shchita. That wasn't given over to him. And he wasn't allowed to eat meat. And the only meat that was available then was carrion, and you can't eat carrion because it's treif, it's an availer. So he was vegetarian. Everyone was vegetarian.
Everyone, even these people.
Everyone was, yeah. Well, no, they were eating, they were cannibals.
They chose that over the
Yeah, they were eating people, which is the ultimate expression of the problem that I'm actually going to discuss. The ultimate expression to say there's no difference between you and me is if I eat you. Cannibalism is an expression of a terrible primitivism where human life is no more sacrosanct than anything else. And you remove your human element down to an animalistic element where you see animals eat each other alive. And I'm no better than an animal, so I'll eat other people. This is a mistake. So Kodesh Baruch Hu said, we're going to end that. And I'm going to allow you to eat meat, but I will not allow any animals to actively predate upon you. And we've never seen that change. Now, you can argue, what about mosquitoes and leeches and ticks? That's not a predation. We're giving them a donation. We're not saying that mongoose gang up regularly on people and eat people. That's not a thing which is a natural thing in the world. You go out and it's literally any animal you see might eat you if it's big enough. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the animals you can't eat them. And he gave man dominion over the animals. We're going to discuss this now. The Medrash Rabbah relates on Keheles Rabbah. The Medrash Rabbah on Keheles, Zion Yud Tes, relates that Hashem told Adam and Rishon that the entire creation had been created only for his sake. Anyone that's done Derech Hashem will know that cold. It has to be like that. It has to be a focal point of creation. This is why the angels were jealous, etc. And he told that. He knew that. Adam and Rishon was aware of that. I've only made everything to give you the ability to choose to do my will. The Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Ber Soloveitchik, on Parshas Noach, which we've just learned, explains that the flood destroyed all creatures, even though it was only man who sinned. That's a very big question. Why should the cows suffer? Because some people were going around robbing and looting and doing all these things.
I thought the animals sinned and the earth sinned.
The main thing that happened was that man sinned, and because of that, the animals were also being promiscuous too, because the animals in a particular given environment would be affected by man. The big problem was man. Kodesh Baruch Hu wasn't going to destroy the world because the animals sinned and then kill all mankind. He was going to kill mankind, and while he's there, he killed the animals too. It was man's fault. Kodesh Baruch Hu says at the end of Parshas Bereishis, I've looked into all humanity, and everyone's only thinking evil always. I've deeply regretted having created man. I'm going to kill them all. Oh, Noach found Chaim. Which, by the way, Noach backwards is Chaim. Noach's name backwards is Chaim. Chaim and Noach are the same word. Chaim, grace. It's a concept of Menucha versus Chaim. Very interesting concept. Also, Ches and Nun, the Lakuto Maran, says when you squeeze those two letters together, you get the word. You get the letter Sof. The letter Sof is Ches and Nun squidged together. There's a whole thing, the beginning of Lakuto Maran, it's all about this concept of Chaim being Noach and Noach being Tes, being the letter Sof. All right. Anyway, the Mishnah in Kedushin. Now, what? Right. It's like this. Since animals are only created because of man, and they're there somehow in order to make a biosphere for man to operate correctly, if man is destroyed, why do I need the animals? They're only there somehow to serve some purpose, to generate a world so that someone can make a free will choice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is after. Now, the Mishnah in Kedushin, the Mishnah in Pei Beis Omad Aleph, says that man is superior to the animals because he was created to serve Hashem, while animals were created to serve man. That's a Mishnah. That needs a lot of hezba. Every animal is created to... What about wolves? What about wasps? What about leeches? What about, I don't know...
Bears.
What about bears? That's what are bears doing? Well, I told you about the wolves of Yellowstone Park, how everything is connected, right? You know, everything is connected as a link. How does that work with eagles? That's a complicated thing. Now, I've got a contradiction. Okay, so that's a mission in Kedushin. Man was created to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And animals were created to serve man. Then along comes a Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. And says, oh, really? It says that on Thursday, we recite the special psalm of the day saying, sing out to Hashem, because birds and fish were created on Thursday to praise Hashem. This seems to imply that birds and fish serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, and therefore they weren't made to serve man. They're there to daven to Hashem too. Everything davens to Hashem. Oh, Perek Shu, that's right. Even elements, the winds praise Hashem, the sun praise. Everyone's got a pasuk.
Their job is a praise of Hashem.
So therefore, when you destroy mankind, leave them intact. The fish are from a different world. You're right. Let's ignore the fish. That's right, but we're talking land animals. They're from a different world. They're from a previous creation. That they weren't affected by this creation's problem.
Right.
Yeah, so they're like living dinosaurs.
Man wasn't near the fish.
Yeah. Man's not in the fish's domain. That's why Kodesh Baruch Hu brought the water up. If the big one is eating the little one, you're having cannibalism, then you can go join the fish in their environment. That's why Kodesh Baruch Hu did it. He says, you want to behave like fish, you can jolly well join them. Big fish eat little fish. You big people eat little people, you can jolly well join the fish. That's one of the reasons he did it. That's brought in the Medrash. Another thing was his mikvah, because they all needed a big tivel the way they were behaving.
How could the water be hot?
That's mummish. A question asked by the Uznot. Mummish, you guys are amazing. I don't need to give a shit. I'll sit down. I'll go. But how could the water be hot? It was lowered down. That's exactly what the Chassam Sofer says.
We did it.
Okay, all right. We're going up. Uznaim Natira says like this. If we know it was boiling water because it was hot, fountains under the earth that brought forth jets that boiled the water, what about the fish? The poor fish are going to boil to death. Says there's, if you have a thing of water and you heat it from the bottom, because of convection, the top gets hot, but the bottom isn't so hot. So the fish had to stay for a year in an environment which wasn't natural for their own, because some fish like to dwell at the top. The sunlight zone was boiling there. So Kodesh Baruch Hu did a nace and allowed them to stay deeper down where it wasn't so hot, and they survived. It's not their fault. They shouldn't have to pay for this. So that's how they moved around, even though it was hot water. Okay. So, coming back to your thing about praising Hashem, what about the birds? I'm back. Rashi says like this, he resolves the contradiction. He explains like this, when people see the various types of birds, I don't know if you've ever done this yourself, have you ever seen quite a big bird take off?
Yeah.
Or a swan land on a lake? Mm-hmm. Ever seen that? Yeah. You've got to just praise Hashem's design for one moment. That is an awesome design. That is just to see them, like it's unbelievable. When you see a bird fly, you praise Hashem. That's what it means. The birds and fish are created to praise Hashem. What does that mean? The birds and fish are created to trigger your praise of Hashem. Why do people go diving and scuba diving to see all these beautiful fish? Because they're amazing things to see. Under the ocean, there are amazing things to see. When you see them, Niflosa Baira. The wonderful things of the creation that Hashem has made. Look at that. Why do you go to the zoo? Why do you pay good money to go to a zoo to see all these creatures and go, wow, look at that. Look at that bird. Look at that monkey. They're amazing. Then you praise Hashem, say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, look what you've made. You've made the logistics for them. You give them their environment. You give them their thoughts, their patterns, their behavior, all their tools they need for life. So everything's amazing. That's what it means they praise Hashem. They act as trigger points for you to praise Hashem, which means they're there to serve you, to act as reminding focal points to praise Hashem.
Why why only birds and fish?
No, they're singled out because there's something very specific that people regularly praise Hashem with.
If you see a lion, you see a
That's true, but they're rare. They're rare. You don't always bump into lions. People are always bumping into birds. And if you live by the coast, always bumping into fish. It's not the birds and the fish that directly praise Hashem. It's that their existence evokes praise for human beings who are so wowed by them that they end up praising Hashem, going, wow, that's a great design. The Marbit, the Beis Elokim Rishon, explains it on Perek Shira. We all know Perek Shira. It's got a pasuk for every fish. A dog says, the worm says, the snail says, the cat says. What's going on? You think cats go round saying they're pasukim? They've got a little pocket to heal him. I'm a cat. This is my pasuk. No, it doesn't work like that. They don't have a little pocket to heal him they picked up, you know. When it means there's specific praises for the various animals, even plants, the trees say, the sun says, minerals, water says. The intention is not that these creatures are actually uttering Tehillim, but rather the praises are offered by people who are inspired by the particular nature of that type of thing in the world. There's a certain pasuk which really is good when you see an ocean. There's a certain pasuk which is really good when you see a bird. There's a certain pasuk which is really good when you see an elephant. You can praise a Kodesh Baruch Hu in a certain way when you see such a thing. I'll tell you about... Did I tell you about Rivka? When Rivka went into Yitzhak for the shidduch for her son, what she brought in, it's a Medrash Rabbah brought in Michtav Meliyahu. Yitzhak was almost blind. And she says, I can't have you marrying my son to Canaanites. Those girls are despicable. Yeah, I know, but it's complicated. Every time she sneezed, she collected her snot in a cup. This is our great-great-grandmother, one of the wisest women that ever lived. She knew what was at stake. You marry Yaakov to the wrong woman, every member of Klal Yisrael is destroyed. No clans. So she had this cup full of snot. She put it in front of Yitzhak Avinu, who was almost blind. She pointed at it and said, these are the daughters of Canaan. And he goes, okay, yeah, no, you're right. Okay, fine, we'll have to find something. Let our son go to, we'll go to Lavan's house. He'll go to your brother's house. You're right, okay, we've got to keep it in the family. What's going on? The Medrash Rabbah says as follows. Seeing a physical thing is far more potent than knowing something from a theoretical perspective. And the Gemara in Shabbos nails it, saying seeing is more powerful than hearing, because Hashem himself told Moshe Rabbeinu that the people you took out of Egypt are defiling themselves. Now I know, without a shadow of a doubt, that God's intelligence is better than the MI5, NSA, GRU, ABC, DFG, all put together from every country in the world. You got to be, if Hashem's saying this is going on, that's no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and nobody really knows. That's Hashem telling you this is going on. So right there and then, Moshe Rabbeinu should have taken the luchos and smashed them on the floor. But he didn't. That's Moses on Mount Sinai, the peak of his career, getting the data from God. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. I'll tell you what's better. Seeing them dancing around a calf. Oh, I'm going to smash them. This is God telling you. What's better? I would argue it's better hearing it from God than seeing it. Answer is, no, it ain't. No, it ain't. You've got to see it with your own eyes. But God himself is telling you on Mount Sinai. You've got the Luchos. He's just given you the Torah. It's written by him. You're the greatest prophet that has ever or will ever be. Nobody's going to have this relationship. You're on Mount Sinai. The whole world's going to... It's not, I want to see it. Let me see it. Show me the money. All right, go down the mountain. Do it yourself. You went down the mountain, saw what they were doing, smashed them. Because you've got to see it. You can sit here for 16 years talking about the amazingness of fish. Wow, pretty amazing. You go scuba diving once, you'll be blown away. See sharks and whales. You won't be able to speak. Huge creatures as big as mountains. Swimming.
Surely the answer, if you want to develop a relationship with Hashem, is to spend a considerable amount of time trying to see.
Avraham Avinu found a Kodesh Baruch Hu by looking into nature. It's a pretty good Haskama. The Yalkut Shmoini, Malachim 214, explains this Medrash. You've got to hear, I know I'm going... I'm still in time. Believe it. I'm still in time. Can you believe it? It feels like 14 hours have gone by. We've still got 20 minutes. Very famous thing in Malachim. Izebel, the most wicked woman who has ever existed. She is the worst of the worst of the worst scum Phoenician princess. Married Ahav. He married out to a Phoenician princess. She's the worst woman mentioned in all of Tanakh combined. And yet, when she danced for Chasen and Kala, it was a schus for her. How much more so when you do mitzvahs with your body? She was killed, she fell off a tower, and the dogs lapped her blood. But they left her scalp and her hands, because she used to move her head and her hands to make her chasen and kala happy whenever they were coming around. It's a mitzvah she did. Kodesh Baruch Hu said to the dogs, those you can't touch, she did mitzvahs of those. Go dance at a chasana. It's a schus. Izebel. She was wiping out Kohanim, killing them left, right and centre. And she was promoting the prophets of the Baal. So Eliyahu decided there's nothing, we're going to have to go head for head, fight fire with fire. Let's have a competition. Let's have a competition. Let's get all your prophets of the Baal, get them together, we'll make him his bayach, a bammer, which isn't allowed at the time. He was, because a prophet is allowed to suspend a mitzvah and a purpose. A prophet's given that particular, he can make a bammer even though it's a central mikdash. He's going to do it. He said, right, we'll make a bammer and you bring a cow and I will bring a cow. You bring it to the Baal and I'll bring it to God. And when fire descends and eats up the cow, that's whoever the real God is. If the Baal does it, the Baal's God. If Hashem does it, Hashem's God. That's the deal. They were so on for this, they were like, okay, yeah, let's do that. Now they were cheating left, right and centre. There was a guy inside with a box of matches. They made the thing hollow. And the Medrash says, yeah. And it was inside with a firelighter trying to do it. And a snake came. A Kodesh Baruch Hu organised that. A snake came and bit him to death. Inside, so the cobra came and said, so basically, and what was Eliyahu busy doing? He was digging a moat. He was digging a moat around his altar and filling it with water. Thousands of litres of water, like a lake. Just to make sure. Don't you say that I'm trying to do that. I'm going to water this thing down. Splashing it on the altar. Tons of water. Yeah. Things are going on for ages, and all the Baal are dancing, their dancers and cashing themselves, and blood's coming out. They're going, oh, Baal, give us it. Nothing's happening. So Eliyahu starts taunting. Where's your God? Maybe he's doing his taxes. Maybe he can't hear you. This is Eliyahu. I'm telling you, I'm quoting now. Maybe he's on the toilet. Maybe he's indisposed. Maybe he's taking a good book and he's going to read it on his toilet. That's what he said. You're allowed to make fun of other people's gods. It's a good thing to do. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then Eliyahu took his bull and he davened to a Kodesh Baruch Hu and a fire came down, lapped up the bull and all the water, and all Klal Yisrael screamed out, Hashem Hu Elokim! God's won! Izebel wrote a letter saying, well done, you've won the battle, but I'll win the war. She was completely unfazed. Yeah, okay, very good. Yeah, you made a big show. Don't worry, long term, I'll still win. Today, you've won. What's going on with that bull? They chose two bulls, brothers, identical twin bulls. You can't say one bull was nicer and the God will only go after the nicer one. Two identical bulls, which means one bull had to go to avoid the Zara and one bull had to go to Kodesh Baruch Hu. There were 450 prophets dancing around. The prophets chose their bull first, otherwise there'd be an argument. The Jews took the best one. So let the goyim do it, just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu, let the goyim get the Torah first. Eliyahu followed suit. You take the one you want, so you don't have a claim. But Vakashat, so they took the one that they thought would be the best one. They went to Mount Carmel, Har Carmel, this is where it happened, in Israel. And they took their bull. Eliyahu looked back. And he took his bull and he looked back and he saw that the other bull, which is the brother of the bull that he had taken, had sat down and refused to budge. This big fat bull just got on the ground. There's 450 prophets of the Baal that now start dragging this bull across the dirt to get it to there. You can imagine the whole balagan of a scene. All these benevolent, sort of like priests and monks. Go, come on, you stupid bull.
But, balagan, I got that.
So, and they're all pulling this animal, wasn't good enough to repeat, they're all pulling this animal, and the animal was digging in its knee. It's not moving. You get a big fat bull, he ain't moving. He's not moving. Eliyahu Hanavi went up to the bull that was going to go to the Baal, and he spoke to the bull. And he said, go with them. floor plan. I'm not going anywhere. Paul said, I'm not moving. He felt as if it's unfair that his identical brother should sanctify HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name on the altar of Hashem, while it's going to desecrate Hashem's name on the altar of the Baal. Why should it do a Chilul Hashem? What Avera have I done to make a Chilul Hashem for Avodah Zarah? You go do it. You want to do it? You go do it.
But it won't.
Oh, don't. Just stop it. It's like, we don't know what's going on. Just stop it. Just imagine the situation. You're taking me. Yeah, just give me a continuity. Let me tell the story. But it won't. Because we're never scared. Because we've read already Sefer Melachim. And this has been 2,500 years later. Eliyahu decided to say to the bull that just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is going to be sanctified when the fire will descend and eat his brother up, you are going to be sanctifying Hashem's name when nothing descends from the heavens to consume on the altar of the Baal. You're not going to go to an altar of Avodah Zarah. Nothing's going to happen to you. You're still going to make a Kiddush Hashem by not being offered. That was his argument back to the bull that won't move.
It's a good deal, by the way, for the bull.
The bull accepted the argument, but al-tanai, only on condition that Eliyahu HaNavi himself personally hand him over to them. You give me to the avoid. I'm not going with them directly. Why would the bull do this? We've got to go into this medrash. We've got to do this medrash now. Now listen to why the bull first said what he said. And listen to why the bull accepted Eliyahu HaNavi's argument latter. The initial response of the bull, saying, why should I make a Chilul Hashem, reflects the idea that the animals serve Hashem directly. If that's the case, the bull was right. By being on the altar of the Baal, it's desecrating Kodesh Baruch Hu's name, and it shouldn't go. I'm an animal, I'm serving Hashem, and I can't do a Chilul Hashem. Eliyahu HaNavi explained to the bull, your reasoning is faulty. You've missed the point of your purpose in life. No creature except for man serves Hashem directly. That if there's aliens living in the universe, they don't serve Hashem directly. Only Jews on one planet can do that, because only we've got the Torah. No creature except for human beings can serve Hashem. The Gentiles do it, v'ashevah mitzvotei noach, and the Jews do it, v'atarag mitzvahs. The animal service to Hashem is through the vector of human beings. Though it's going to be physically placed upon the altar of the Baal, people would be affected in no way, because no fire's going to come down and eat you, so you don't have to worry about it. That would prove the Baal is false, and only Hashem's going to be sanctified when the fire does come from Shemayim for me. Once the bull acknowledged that's true, that man's going to make the Kiddush Hashem, and it's not an independent agent, but a clear tool in human beings' hands, it was willing to go. But it should be Eliyahu HaNavi himself to use light in such a way, because all of creation is only set aside for man. And if you're the one who's going to be the servant of Hashem, I want you to do it, not them. Eliyahu HaNavi said, fine, if now you accept that this is your role in the world, I'll use you. I'll take you over to the Baal, and you're going to be as important as your brother, which is going to get eaten by the fire.
He wanted to say,
if you're the... You're right, if there's hard, when an animal... Listen to me, this is such a macabre question. Try to see it intellectually. If you were a fish in the ocean, you were a fish just swimming about in the ocean, and every single second of your life is either looking to eat or avoid being eaten, what's the best possible outcome that could happen to you?
Get caught by...
Get caught by who?
A man.
And then what?
You filter. And then be...
If you could get your body to utilize a yid on Shabbos for Kedusha Shabbos, that would be the highest jump point you could get to. Rather than being eaten by a shark, will eventually be killed by some guy in China, so that that fin will be ending up in a soup. Think about how far you could go with your energy. That's why the Chasam Sofer says, the fruits of the trees disobeyed Hashem. The tree's bark was meant to taste like the fruit of the tree. And the trees felt as if this is a waste of our energy. Because they knew the only bit that's edible of us is the fruits. So let's put all of our koichas into the fruit. And why waste time decorating the bark, which is useless, with a taste of... Why should an orange tree put the orange flavour in the wood? Only the oranges are going to be used. I want to give over, says the Chasam Sofer, to the next energy level up. So put all your eggs in the basket, which is going to move somewhere. Yeah. Only the Esrog listened by. Only the Esrog said, okay, I'll do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Hashem's Ratzon works. That's why it's called a Prietz Adar. That's why it's called a splendorous tree, because it listens to Hashem. An Esrog bark has the citronella, oil in the actual bark, which is what a citron is. It's a bag of citron oil, which is used, by the way, in spray tan lotions. All the spray tan lotions are from Esrogim. That's why it's a very big business. There's always Esrogim available, because there's always people that want fake tans. And they farm them for fake tans, because that's what it's used for during the year.
Forget making jam.
Yeah.
No one. Perfect use of, you know.
So I got to... This is so...
Okay, sorry.
Yes.
You look great, yes, it's new Esrog juice.
Animal offerings in the Beis HaMikdash are meant as a means of utilizing the animals in one of the highest possible forms of service to Hashem, and therefore the animal, think about it, if you're a cow, what cow do you want to be? Would you want to be a burger eaten by a Rebbe? Or would you want to be the one bull which is given on Yom Kippur? Or Shmini Atzeres, which is even higher, according to you. That's the one you'd want to be. You'd want to be on the Mizbeach for the closest level of close between man and God. You've got to be the facilitator. How much higher a service could you get?
Does the animal care, by the way?
Let's discuss this. Clearly, the animal in the Medrash with Eliyavi was extremely perturbed.
Okay.
What happened to that? Do we know what happened to that animal?
Hold on. We can say that using an animal for human needs is really fulfilling the purpose for that which the animal was created. This is a line I'm going to have to say again, and I don't mind emblazoning it a couple of times. Using an animal for human needs is fulfilling the purpose for which it was made, as long as the Torah allows you to use an animal like that. Like, for instance, castrating animals is forbidden in the Torah. The Torah says, wherever you may live, already it's telling us we're going to be exiled before we got into Israel, by the way. It says, yeah, you're going to go in and you're going to get exiled and you're going to live in lots of different places. You can't do this wherever you go to. As long as there's some purpose served by man, Bal Tashchis, which is wastefulness, a prohibition against wanton waste, nor Tsar Balachayim, nor the prohibition of causing pain to a living being, apply. Food, clothing, medicines, medical and scientific knowledge to benefit man, as well as all the other physical and material benefits derived from animals, not only halakhically permitted, but they are encouraged, according to the Torah. Use the animal correctly. I want you to use the animal correctly. Don't you remember the thing about kidney stones? I told you about the kidney stones, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. The little calf was walking to the slaughter, and it went, oh, let's go, I don't want to go. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, go! For this is the reason you were created. So it just went, okay. And it went. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him kidney stones. Not that he was wrong in the overall reason. He was wrong in the lack of his sensitivity. So he was punished with pain. You should have given him a cuddle. That doesn't mean that he's wrong. That's the reason he was created to turn into veal. That's true. But you don't treat him like that. You're Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi.
Still one called creature.
Still, you have mercy upon him. Yeah. Can I take an extra 5 minutes, please, of your time? Yeah. Vegetarianism and veganism. You've got to do both. There are those...
Sorry, what's the difference?
Vegans more from...
Okay.
No animal products at all. They don't wear leather shoes, no leather belts, nothing from animals. They won't get an aliyah because it's wrong to utilise animal skin for the Torah. They won't wear tefillin. They won't put mezuzahs on their door. Won't eat eggs.
As again, vegetarianism in the dictionary says will not eat an animal that's been killed to be consumed. So roadkill's fine.
Oh, is that right? Okay, maybe. Fine. Okay.
A vegan wouldn't eat roadkill.
Correct.
So vegetarians against animal cruelty, a vegan is nothing to add.
No, vegetarian is only against animals being killed to be eaten.
Fine, okay. Yeah.
But I assume that against fox hunting too.
Good traded roadkill. No, not according to the base rules of vegetarianism.
There are those who claim that the korbanos that Hashem has organised is barbaric and cruel to the animal, while at the same time they will eat meat, wear fur and leather, and make use of animals. But God's utilisation of the base of Mikdash is not good. I'll eat meat, but that's cruel to make a temple where you slaughter animals.
Okay.
Some people claim that. That's a camp that we need to discuss. There's people that will go out and have a burger because that's food. But why should a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you're not going to use the food, you just burn an oiler completely on the Mizbeach. It's a waste of time, a waste of resources. And you shouldn't do that to the animal. It's barbaric. You want to serve God, you do that with flowers or whatever. You don't do that with cows. That's an argument. When an individual makes an argument like that, what they're saying is as follows. They're recognizing only the physical and natural aspects of the world, and they're completely ignorant to any spiritual aspect. They are not concerned with animal life, and they totally negate the spiritual benefit of the sacrifices. So they feel using animals for what they see as a useless purpose is not justified. Not they won't eat meat, but you're wasting your time. Others come along and they don't eat meat, and they don't make any other use of any animal product because they believe man has no right to exploit other living beings. That's a moral stance that they're taking. Such people, of course, also oppose animal sacrifice. While they are indeed more consistent in their argument, that philosophy is not in line with the Torah. Let me explain. There's a Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis, and Chulin Pei Dalad Amud Aleph, that says vegetarianism has health reasons and sources in the Torah. Indeed, there's something called an Am Haaretz diet. If an individual is a Torah ignoramus, it is prescribed that he should not eat meat during the week outside of Shabbos and Yom Tov, because he's not doing the meat an adequate service. Who are you to eat the meat? If the meat needs an aliyah, and you're not holding in the week with such an aliyah, wait till you get an Ashami Yaseira. We know that even a farmer who is untrustworthy with taking tithes is trustworthy on Shabbos if he tells you he took the tithe, because he's got an Ashami Yaseira. And therefore now he's got an Ashami Yaseira, he has a different actual legal status halachically, if he's a farmer, stuff like that, because we know people have a different status in Ashami Yaseira. Let him eat meat then. So such an idea, only to eat meat on Shabbos and Yom Tov, if you're not holding by it. That is sourced in the Torah itself. If you're not going to do the animal a deal, then don't eat it. You're meant to utilise the animal correctly, but if you aren't going to utilise it correctly, don't do it. An ignoramus, a Torah ignoramus. Also, eating meat is not ideal. It's only ever sanctioned directly for a mitzvah, a Seudos mitzvah, boss of a yayin. You got to finish a Masechta, Shabbos, Yom Tov. They say eat meat. It doesn't say go around the week eating meat. Or if you're on a very high level spiritually, then of course you can eat meat every day if you want. Now, the idea that one should not eat meat merely to be satisfied, or that an Am Haaretz should not eat meat, has a basis in Torah sources. But the idea that man has no general right to eat meat at all, or exploit animal for his usage, is not in line with the Torah. That doesn't make sense. Do you mind if I just discuss this? Do you want to stop?
No.
Do you remember I talked in Birchas Minim between the difference in a min and an apikoros? People say these two terms totally. He's a min. He's a heretic. He's an apikoros. He's an heretic. These are two totally different things. Remember, just remember this, we discussed the minim, and we talked about that in Bichos Minim, Falamon Shinim. What's the concept of Apikoros? What's minim? What is this? What's the difference? Min is a Goyish name, Mani. There was a man called Mani, and he believed that there were two opposing divine forces that were slugging it out for superiority. Very similar to Christianity. God and the Satan slugging it out for superiority. Who's going to get the most souls at the end of the game? Whoever wins, whoever's got the most souls wins. That's min. That's a min who believes that. Apikorsus comes from the word Epicurus, who was a philosopher saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world, but he is no longer an active participant in the world events. He's made it like a watch. He leaves it on a table and he's gone off to do other projects. And the world is just kind of running on its own. That's Apikorsus. A min is saying God's fighting with some other kind of equal power and whoever wins, wins it out. Do you hear the... Vegetarianism is more on the side of Apikorsus than min. You're right that what we said earlier, that Adam HaRishon was prohibited from killing animals in order to eat their meat. But in the world after Noach, which is what we live in, God permitted man to eat meat. Even though in those days there is no... You should know, today there is no absolute requirement. There's no mitzvah to eat meat. Directly. Like you've got a mitzvah to eat Pesach first night Seder. You've got to do that. Or you've got to eat meat of the Paschal lamb in Jerusalem once a Kodesh Baruch Hu was brought back the Beis HaMikdash. But in our days without the Beis HaMikdash, there's no deraisa mitzvah to eat meat directly. Now, according to many opinions, it is an integral part of celebrating Yom Tov HaSinu's mitzvah. But to say it is outright wrong to eat meat is against the Torah. So Rav Yosef Albo says that after the flood, a Kodesh Baruch Hu permitted man to kill animals and eat their flesh. And he says the root of the behaviour that led to man's downfall and to the flood began with Cain, who refused to be a shepherd because he felt it was wrong to exploit animal life. How politically in tune is that with today? He said, look, let my brother wants to go be a shepherd. He's doing it wrong. He shouldn't. Who are we to shepherd animals? What's his issue? That ideology is that we're all the same. We're not elevated above animal life, but human life and animal life are just the same. We're just another kind of very intelligent animal. That was already Cain, the son of Adam and Chava. Since that view, that hashkafa, that ideology, says that man is just a behemoth, just very clever and very developed, it led mankind to act like the animals, become depraved, and resulted in a Kodesh Baruch Hu flooding the world. Because we're eating ourselves. Look, if animals are doing it, we'll do it. We're no different. So in which case, who am I to exploit the animals? I'll be a farmer. If you preach ideological vegetarianism or veganism, you're making the same mistake. Evolution says that man is nothing more than a highly developed primate. Now, according to that view, man is morally prohibited from exploiting life that's on a par with his. Note, this is my own little parenthetical thing that I want to put in on the side. Not that you see animals making the same moral decisions that we do. No monkey says, oh, I shouldn't eat another monkey because at the end of the day, who am I to exploit other life? If animals don't do that, how come you're doing that? Who are you to make a moral decision on a high ground if you're another animal? You should behave like the animals. So Pasuk in Keheles, Dalid Yud Tes, Musa ha'adam min ha'bahema ayin. The superiority of man is his ability to say no. It's because animals can't say no to their lusts and their internal desires that they're animals, and man can, which means he isn't. Man can behave like an animal if he wants, but he doesn't have to if he doesn't want to. That means he's not on a par with animals. So Kodesh Baruch Hu did the ultimate thing. He said, you know what? You can kill and eat them. Hashem is clearly showing mankind that you're not on a par, but you're intrinsically above them, and I won't let them eat you. Animals aren't our peers. They're created to serve us. Now, if you oppose the utilization of animals for human purposes, even for physical and material purposes, that's wrong. But if you oppose the utilization of animals for spiritual purposes, that's doubly wrong, because you don't even know what's going on. It's a very interesting thing that if you kill an animal for no good reason. The Torah holds, as we've learnt, that it's like you shed innocent blood, Kodesh Baruch Hu holds you responsible. If you just go to a kill, you just go to a bull and just kill it, just to see what happens. Just want to kill an animal. Just fun. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you've just shed innocent blood. But if I've shed innocent blood, how can I eat bird? That's different. You're utilising the animal correctly within creation. I need leather. I walk around with animal skins on my feet. No different from like a pygmy in, I don't know, in the South America. They have animal skins. I've got animal skins on my feet. I live in houses made of cooked clay. Do they not live in huts made of clay? I need to utilise animals. The Bavaka Shah, you want to kill an animal for the Bavaka Shah. You stumble want to kill an animal, you're a bloodshed, you're a murderer. The Torah equates you with being a murderer of a human. If you utilise creation badly, you're always a sinner. If you utilise creation well, you're always a bal mitzvah. Misuse is tantamount to murder because you've taken life for no purpose. The Gemara of Bava Metzia, Pei Talad, Omad Aleph tells us, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, go to the calf, and he was struck. On his level, he should have understood, yes, that's true, that's your purpose. But don't be insensitive. Don't just go to a bull and kill it. Now, it's the Shem Mishmur, no, yes, the Shem Mishmur that says, very interesting thing, fox hunting, things like that, blood sports, you want to really do that, do that. He says, Das Yochid. He says, if that's the way you're going to utilize creation, then you can go do it. Others say, no, Tzar Balachayim. The Torah says you can't just make an animal suffer. It's got to be a direct utilization. Now, that's all physical. What about the factors we're going to talk about in the next bit is the role of the Karbonos. What Karbonos are actually doing upstairs? That we haven't discussed yet, but they're doing something. They're actually doing something. That's why they're there. That, by the way, you can tell what sin is going on depending upon what animal you give. If I told you about the bull versus the goat, how it gores, I've done that with you. For the tape, I'm now going to mime a bull. So here's this is a bull. This is how a bull gores. Can you see that? Side to side. A goat has horns on the top of its head coming out like this, and it moves like this. This is the more of a Shemesh that says this. And it moves like this. Can you see that? When a bull gores, he gores like this. I'm sorry. Yes, yeah, you're in the hot seat. You were thinking, where should I sit? You've got the water. When a bull gores, he'll gore like this. Can you see? When a goat gores, he'll do this. And that's dangerous. If you get too close to a goat, he kind of moves his head. It can be very dangerous. If you're on a farm and they've still got their horns, be very careful not to stand directly above a goat. It's safer to stand to its side. To a bull, don't stand to its side. A bull gores on its level. A goat gores up. When you've sinned against people, you bring a bull. But a he-goat is always brought as an atonement against sins for God. You sin against God, you've gored upwards. When a bird is given, when a goat is given, when a bull is given, when flour is given, all these have very deep spiritual symbolism as to exactly what has been damaged upstairs. We've got to discuss that. If you say it's barbaric to give animals as offerings, not only are you saying that I'm not allowed to use animals in creation because I'm on a par with it, which is completely wrong. That's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has definitely made us different from the animals. Number two, you're saying I disagree with any spiritual concept this could fulfill, even though you're completely ignorant of it. It's not fair. You can utilize animals because you're not on a par with them, because you are the center of creation, because you have to do what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is telling you. And two is, these things have special spiritual tap in energies which you can utilize spiritually as well, by the way. That the ultimate experience of that is the avoider. Now think about what we're doing here. Let's say we accept all this. What are we really saying? We're saying, I accept creation the way you made it, not the way I think it is. What's the ultimate expression of that? A functioning Beis HaMikdash. If you put the Beis HaMikdash back and stuff it with animals and use them like that, you're saying the way you say it goes is the way it goes. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu. Desire us the way you want it done, not the way I want it done. I want to make my will your will, so you'll make your will mine. I want it back the way it was. Bring Mashiach to not make anything new. Bring Mashiach to bring it back the way it should be that I've ruined. That's why we're davening for that. Now, remember, don't lose sight of the place. We've just finished the Shemona Ezra. We've done all of our personal things, done all the national things. Why are we starting off with Karbonos? What's Karbonos going to do with the price of fish? I've just finished asking Kodesh Baruch Hu for all these things. Bring back the Tzaddikim and bring back, get all the Gerim and bring back David and Melech and hear my prayer. Right, I want a functioning slaughterhouse, please.
What?
Now that I've got clarity on what I need, I have to show you I'm going to use the world right. How are you going to do that? Functioning based on Middash answers everything. First things first, at the beginning of the sign off to a Shemona Esrei, so you've got to put the world back the way it should be that I've ruined. That's making a ticking for Adam Arishan. This links in with the problem of Adam Arishan. That's why we're diving for the Ritzay right now. And that's why we're going to go into the concept of the Karbonos. And that's why without Karbonos, you can't thank Hashem. Because you've got to use it right. Once you can thank Hashem, the ultimate thing to daven for is not a bracha at all. It's a vessel. It's shalom. Shalom is in and of itself not a bracha. It's merely a vessel to put other brachas in. And without it, no bracha can be given to you. If you don't have shalom, no bracha you get means anything. You have to build up to that. One of the ways to build to that is to use the world in a peaceful, good way, which means together, using it right. Karbonos. We can't do this without Karbonos. How important prayer is versus Karbonos is Machlokas Rambam Rambam, but as a show we'll do next time. We'll talk about the role of animals and then go on to Fasecha Zena that we should see God with our eyes. Dafka, remember now, remember we did Shema Kaleinu. Hear our voice. When you get good, Efsha, we could see you. We're building up and up and up through the chain here. Bez Hashem will carry on next week. It's been amazing to see you.